Your lack of passion is your passion. Your lack of following your passion is what you're so passionate about portraying.
Now, go find the others. .com.
Don't blow it. Keep it simple. Count your money.
Attention local musicians, if you play rock, jazz, folk, bluegrass, hip-hop, Americana, reggae, world music, or blues like D.C. Bellamy here in the background, consider signing up your solo act or your band to the KKFI Band Auction this April. We will showcase your music for 30 minutes on our 100,000-watt radio station in exchange for a donation of a two-hour gig to the KKFI Band Auction. Intrigued? Call Bill at 816-994-7869. That's 816-994-7869.
You are listening to 90.1 FM KKFI Kansas City Community Radio.
that was one from that no doubt you've heard before. Now, what happened to us was that we had 2 years suspended practice, you might say. You probably know about that we didn't tour for 2 years. This is our first time round for that length of time. What we've done is we've had a look at the... what we've done is we've had a look at some of the stuff that we didn't consider we could do on stage before, and we're going to have a go at it this time round. This is one of the tracks from... This is about the first love, the one that you never forget. 10 years gone. That's all right with me. In the midst, I think of you and how it used to be.
According to some, the greatest live version of 10 Years After ever. Right here on Community Radio in the 21st Century. At 15 minutes after the hour of 4, you're listening to the Paragon Radio program. And we continue on. After having heard Suicide 307 with your 3 o'clock flavor. The phone lines are open if you'd like to enjoin the city with conversation, either delightful or politically antagonistic. Your opportunity is before you. 816-931-5534, 931-KKFI. As we go off into the future. So I'm looking at stories to talk about when one might expect a talk show host would do such a thing. And I come across this story titled "A Futurist on Why Lawyers Will Start Becoming Obsolete This Year." And that seems like good news, doesn't it? Some wonderful news. Why lawyers will become obsolete. Now, the idea of being a futurist, what do you think a futurist does? What kind of day does a futurist have? Think about that. It would probably be kind of a cool job, being a futurist. You'd probably, you'd have to be on time to everything, though. One would imagine. But anyway, being a futurist, a guy that tries to predict the way technology is going. So then people who are trying to develop new technology can build upon those ideas based upon futurists. Now, this guy is a futurist, and he's also a science fiction writer. His name is Carl Schroeder. And I'm sure some of you know who he is. I don't know who he is. I don't read science fiction. That's not my thing. But it's an interesting idea. And what it's based upon is this project called Ethereum, which uses blockchains, the technology behind Bitcoin, to create smart contracts. Contracts that live online beyond the control of any single entity, and can check their operating parameters at any time. That's interesting. So Bitcoin is a decentralized currency. People use it. You can exchange it for dollars. Been some interesting things that have happened to Bitcoin exchanges, essentially bank-like entities that hold people's Bitcoins, where they've been hacked into. There was the big one in Japan, Mt. Gox, which that's a story that's at least a month old, but it was like $500 million worth of Bitcoins. U.S. dollars, real dollars, $500 million worth of Bitcoins were hacked or were stolen from Mt. Gox. And Mt. Gox, if you're wondering, is an acronym. Magic the Gathering Online Exchange, because that's who we're dealing with here. People, the Magic the Gathering crowd, with the Bitcoins on a certain level. I don't know anyone that has a single Bitcoin. I know people that are kind of interested in them, but I stopped trafficking in humans and buying illegal narcotics to be sent to my front door when they shut down the Silk Road. So why would you need Bitcoins at this point? Can you think of a single reason? I can't. What would you do with a Bitcoin? You would protest the central, bank, right? The Federal Reserve. You could stand up to the centralized money powers, which everyone says is what you need to do and might actually be part of the solution. If the currency of empire and militarism is the Federal Reserve note, you stop using that currency, therein you have the future. But it is also kind of interesting because the Bitcoin started off as something that people would mine. And I just, anyway, the idea of the concept of Bitcoins being used to create a technology that would create contracts that live online, in that you don't need lawyers to file documents with the courts or the government for you. It would just exist online. And I got to looking at this document, and it's really powerful. The thesis behind, or the abstract behind, the Ethereum project is essentially starts like this. In the last few months, there has been a great amount of interest into the area of using Bitcoin-like blockchains, the mechanism that allows for the entire world to agree on the state of a public ownership database for more than just money. Commonly cited applications include using on-blockchain digital assets to represent custom currencies in financial instruments. Smart property devices such as cars, which track a colored coin on a blockchain to determine their present legitimate owner, as well as a more advanced application such as decentralized exchange, financial derivatives, peer-to-peer gambling on blockchain identity and reputation systems. Does that mean anything to anybody? I'm looking at this and I'm just blown away. On the way this is phrased and what is talked about here, this is so far over my head. I guess that's neither here nor there. But the general idea being is that if we're, I mean, you know, in this future, as this Carl Schroeder is essentially saying, that this idea is so close to happening that it's going to be in 6 months. It's according to a futurist and a science fiction writer. It's just 6 months from now, and we're going to have bitcoins for contracts.
That's why all these bankers are killing themselves.
You think that's the connection is there? Therein lies the connection. But I find this to be kind of interesting. I tried to figure out, I went to look for more information in regard to the Ethereum project, this idea of a decentralized online exchange for kind of legal documents and contracts, agreements, I guess loans too, be an important thing. Help people in regards to the loaning of Bitcoins and trading of those. Because the Bitcoin is an interesting thing. Because the Bitcoin either represents the solution to the problem of a fiat currency, if it is a problem, if you take issue with it and say that it is a problem. Some people say that it's not a problem, and there's no way for the government to be too in debt, and that, you know, $17 trillion to infinity is no big deal. Not a problem that we should be worried about whatsoever, because the United States government is still the strongest economy, or the United States economy is still the strongest in the world, based upon the full faith and credit of the U.S. government, which is amazing. It truly is. That all those things still apparently seem to be true. But moving in that direction, you know, you can look at the Bitcoin as either being the solution to the problem of a centralized bank that funds a military empire and creates economic and demographic inequalities through the business cycle and the control of employment, or however, you know, the multiple arguments that have been presented against a Federal Reserve Bank and centralized bank. The idea of inflated currencies. How do you got to wonder, how would all that work? If you didn't have a Federal Reserve, would you have billionaires? Is that possible? Would you still have the billionaires? I guess you would. I figure some people, I mean, how would, if you only had, you have to expand it as it's needed. Hardly an economist myself, but I do think it's interesting in regards to Bitcoin that it does represent an alternative to the Federal Reserve note. And now they're saying that there's this other Ethereum, which would offer an alternative to the county register's office. That's what it seems like anyway. But all this information and this technology is so far over my head. And I think that Bitcoins aren't perfect yet either, because they might not represent an alternative to the Federal Reserve System. They might just be the first step in the very real and absolute future of us having a digital currency, where there's not Federal Reserve notes anymore. Just like how there used to be food stamps. You know, which food stamps were booklets of, you know, U.S. Department of Agricultural issued currency that was redeemable for food. Or, you know, ding-dongs and 7-Up. It all depends on what you wanted to get. So there actually were food stamps, kind of. I'm sure that, you know, you go even farther back. You might have, food stamps during ration times. But nevertheless, now it's an EBT card. And you have, you know, a debit card, a state-issued debit card. They put value on, just like, you know, an unemployment card. They send you a little card in the mail. And you use that, and then it's got the value stored right on it. Which is a way for the banks, did you hear about that? The banks with the unemployment cards, they get fees. Like Citibank gets to charge fees for handling the transactions. So they can actually create the unemployment and then profit off of it too. Which is kind of, you know, it's a sustainable business model. No? Yeah, good morning. Good morning, folks. It's 4:27 in the a.m. It's like a 50 degrees out there. And yes, I was talking to you. I'm looking at you. And
okay.
It's a talk show. You're here, aren't you? He's here for the Wi-Fi, everybody.
I thought you were talking to the audience. Somebody's calling.
Yeah, it's the same person that's been trying to call all night. They don't get how the phone works. Good morning. You're on the radio.
Hey. Yeah, it's me. Yeah, right. Can you hear me?
You got to turn your radio down.
Okay, I got it down. I had to have it on because, you know, he's trying to get me to quit calling. And I don't know what he was doing, but I could. It was costing me a minute every time. I got a track phone, you know.
Okay.
And well, it was costing me a minute every time this is solid, you know who I am. Okay. And anyway.
Good enough, man. What would you like to talk about tonight?
Well, really, I just wanted to talk about bicycles, you know.
Sure. What kind of bicycles?
I'd like to do a plug, you know, for 816. And I think you know Bree, don't you?
They're good people over there at the
Yes, they are. And they need money. You know, they need some money because they've been trying to finish their, unless they finished it. Because I've been over there I don't need to go much. I got a good bike. And I don't volunteer there anymore because I can't see well enough. I have cataracts. So anyway, I'm crippled and I'm homeless and, you know, and sure. I live in, and I'm getting ready to go back to the woods. Thank you, whatever you want to call that.
Yeah, today would have been a good day for the woods, huh? A nice day to get out in the woods.
Well, yeah, and I tried to get down there with some friends, but I couldn't get anybody that actually would go, you know. But tomorrow, I got something to say, but they won't show up anyway. They're too young, you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, whatever, man. You know, it's hard to
get. Okay, now, the other thing is, in case anybody's out there who knows the address of the museum in Lawrence on Massachusetts Street, I need that. Okay? Now, I went and bought some. Now, I haven't been living in there. But anyway.
There's somebody else on the phone.
I'm going to just.
No, maybe they know the address. I mean, that's what I was going to ask.
Yeah, I mean, you can help me out, okay? If you don't mind, I appreciate it.
Hey, other guy on the phone? Are you there?
Your show sucks.
Oh, it's the show sucks guy. He's there, too. Do you know where the show sucks guy. He doesn't know where the address.
Okay, now wait a minute. You're talking to me. I'm confused. See.
Now there was the other guy that called in. There was the other guy on the phone.
I'm challenged. You know, I don't have devices. You know, this is the only device I have.
Hey, and
I wouldn't
good,
have
man.
A telephone phone if I would. Anyway, that's. I just need a little. This a little bit of help. Would you guys rather I didn't call?
No. You spent the whole night calling and you couldn't get through. I don't know. It was. Difficult process.
Well, he was calling me an idiot, and he thought I was drunk. And said, no, I used to be an alcoholic, you know, decades ago. But you know, I mean, I don't. I'm recovered.
I apologize. I assumed you were an idiot because we were having such an issue with the phone. But I'm glad. You
am I talking to Benjamin?
Yeah.
Oh, is it Michael T? Oh, okay. Well, hey, thanks, man. Hey, I'm not mad at you, but I don't know what you were doing. Okay. I didn't know. You had to. Something's different with your phone. This never happened to me before.
My friend, it really, at this point, it does not matter at all. We can move on. The issue with
I'm having there's something. I think there's something wrong with my phone.
Yeah, that's okay, brother. That's okay.
Because I'm not being able to hear you very well, okay? But anyway, you understand what it is. So if anybody could, you know, please help me out. And that's why I wanted to try to call in early, because I thought there might be more people out there.
How could we help you out?
Okay. Just, you know, I mean, anybody out there who can spread the word about 816.
Sure. All right. Spread the word, folks.
Please do it. Okay. And if anybody knows where the museum is, the address of it, you know, I think I can find the zip code without any problem. But the address of the museum and it won't be in the Yellow Pages.
You know, I know who would know. I know who would know.
Okay.
Lawrence Chamber of Commerce.
Okay, well, if you could give them my number, you have it, don't you?
Yeah, I would give them a call. But you have a wonderful day, and it's almost wood weather.
Have them call me anytime, please. Please, please, please. I need that. Thanks a lot.
Take care. I would give the Lawrence Chamber of Commerce a call. They'd probably be able to help you out. I'd talk to them about various museums and other attractions. And Larry, you might be the guy to know. Do you know the address of the museum in Lawrence? Jesse?
I can find out in 2 seconds. Do you know what museum it is?
I have no idea. No idea at all. But that is, you know, potentially the non sequitur. What were we talking about before? It's hard to say, isn't it?
The lack of lawyers.
Which might be a beautiful future. Because it's that whole, there's a double standard of sorts. But if there was...
Did he need the address or the telephone number?
He wanted somebody to call him. So I don't know if we can actually set that up.
We can't set that up, no.
Have somebody from the Lawrence Museum? Is it a... What kind of museum is
it? Watkins Community Museum of History and Arts.
I wonder if they have a life-size wax sculpture of John Brown. Our friend's calling back. We'll see if it can work. Friend,
hey,
can you hear me? Yeah, friend, is that you?
Yeah, I can barely hear you because there's something wrong.
I don't know
with my phone or something.
All right.
But anyway, no, it's not. It's a resonance, okay? There's somebody. I can't say her name.
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah, right. Because we're on the radio.
But that's what everybody calls it in Lawrence. It's the museum. Anybody who knows her. You know, or at least if she still lives there. You know, it's been years, but I can't imagine she'd sell that house ever. Okay?
All right.
So that's what it is. It's a residence. All right. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
All right, take care.
Love you, brother.
All right, yeah. Peace be with you, you know. And so you're familiar with the place?
Yes, I am.
What's the address? General idea. What part of Lawrence?
Like 11th.
11th Mass. In Mass. What do they do there?
Oh, I've never been to the museum. I'm not familiar with, you know, that aspect of it.
No, you made a funny face.
Did I really?
Yeah, I know you did.
It's a funny thing. I'll tell you later.
Oh, okay. One of those things. Well, coming up at 5 o'clock, it's Explorations with Michio Kaku, and right before that, Worker Independent News here on Community Radio in the 21st Century. Speaking of Bitcoins, the Internal Revenue Seuss, a Seuss being a drunk, the Internal Revenue Service takes a position on Bitcoins. They say they're property, which means they're not a counterfeit currency, which is interesting because there was the case years back, like, you know, 5 or 6 years, of a guy. It was like in Indiana. You know, it's always got to be a guy from someplace like Indiana, right?
Gary.
I think it was Gary. I think it was the other part of the state. But he was making his own dollars. You call it Liberty dollars or something like that. He was stamping gold and making currency. And like the Secret Service, because the Secret Service was originally formed to combat counterfeiting. They raided him or something and confiscated all of his coins, which were made out of gold. He's one of those guys. He's like a Ron Paul guy, you know. That's interesting in that you would think a gold coin would be property. Even if it's stamped with something like dollar. I think the government's argument in prosecuting this guy, and they, I believe, won, was that, you know, it was something that looked very similar to currency, and that you were trying to create something that was fraudulent, trying to pass off something that was representing in some way the United States dollar, which it really wasn't, because it was made out of gold, and United States dollars are not. Fair enough, made out of gold. But the IRS takes a position on bitcoins and says they're property. Said that last week, that it would treat Bitcoin as property rather than currency for tax purposes, a move that forces users who have grown accustomed to operating under the government's radar to deal with a new tax issue and reporting requirements. Experts are saying the move is a way to push Bitcoins further away from the fringes and into the mainstream financial system. It's getting legitimacy that it didn't have previously. And according to at least somebody, it's putting Bitcoin on the track to becoming a true financial asset. So it does not have legal tender status in any jurisdiction by being officially recognized as property by the IRS. If a user buys a product or service with Bitcoin, the IRS will expect the individual to calculate the change in value from the date the user acquired Bitcoin to the date it was spent. That would give the person's basis to calculate the gains or losses on what the IRS is now calling property. So the property will be subject to capital gains taxes. Long-term capital gains taxes are capped at 20%. Individual traders in currency markets are expected to treat gains or losses as regular income. From a tax perspective, this is truly the best possible outcome. Up until now, Bitcoin enthusiasts, as the article refers to them, says that people have been able to buy, sell, and trade their gains with few fees and little oversight. But that will change everything now, won't it? And they all have to report their income. The IRS finally wants their piece. And it's getting legitimized. And is it just another step in the desensitization? It's just like when they have, you know, a raid at the local middle school, when they SWAT team the middle school and put all the children on the floor and terrorize them. It's a desensitization to the police state. Is this just another step in the desensitization for us to all have digital currency? There to be no more paper currency, i.e. every financial transaction would be online, would be a computer-based thing, which there has got to be something at some point. I know that there has been a lot of positives about Bitcoins, but then there's also been some issues with security. And you could technically keep a Bitcoin on a flash drive offline or something like that and not have to. You can put it in a safe deposit box. But it's kind of interesting because you think about a bank, having the FDIC, which I guess is the full faith and credit of the federal government, or a bank if you, you know, if your credit card information gets taken and somebody's buying stuff with your credit card stuff. Yeah, has that ever happened to you? There's a charge on your account, or you've gotten your card stolen or something like that, and you had to contact your bank and say, well, no, I didn't actually buy that. That was not something I purchased. They just automatically refund you the money. Very easy process. I'm sure if you were to lie to them, they would eventually figure that out. But to do that is a very easy thing to do. But you don't have that same luxury with the Bitcoin or maybe even the digital currency. It just seems like it would be such a potential for a real manipulation. But most of our currency right now today is, of course, digital currency. Most transactions are with our debit cards, our credit cards. I mean, it's really, it's a sign of being of a different generation to use a checkbook or something like that. I was at the store the other day, and there was somebody paying with a checkbook, and as usual, that person was 95 years old or something like that. And the check was extra long to write, and I mean, there's really no point. I mean, I don't know what difference it makes, unless, of course, you're talking about something of legal nature, which I guess brings us back to the Ethereum project, because a check is a good representation to have if you have to take something to a court. You know, taking a printout of a bank statement to a judge is one thing. Taking a check, a canceled check to a, not a canceled, a completed check, whatever they call that. Taking a, you know, a check that is, has fulfilled its life cycle to a judge and showing them, you know, that as a representation of payment or something like that is, would be legally binding. That would be something that is very clearly representation of exchange. It's that future that Bitcoin represents, that future that Ethereum represents. Is either, you know, is certainly the path that we're headed on, where everything is becoming more digitized, more automated. And consequently, the ideas and the thought process and the foundations of this are so abstract. I mean, just again, this last week, there was a company purchased by Facebook. Was it Facebook or Google that bought this? And it was a startup company that hadn't even produced anything. Oculus VR. And Facebook bought this company called Oculus VR. Get a clear understanding of what this company does. It is the maker of the Oculus Rift virtual reality headset. Oculus's mission is to enable you to experience the impossible. Their technology opens up the possibility of completely new kinds of experiences. Immersive gaming will be the first. That sounds like a good way to spend the rest of your eternity. I'm very wary of all this. I think that there's a good reason to be. The idea of immersive gaming, or these interactive visual reality, virtual reality headsets for immersive gaming. I mean, because what games are we talking about? We're talking about Call of Duty and stuff like that, right? And which are extremely graphic and violent in nature. And I'm not trying to, you know, sound like a wimp or something along those lines, but there's definitely a psychological effect to all that. brings me to this idea of Ray Kurzweil and this uploading our brains to hard drives and living in computer-based virtual realities, and that being the future. And us being able to live forever on computer networks. Well, that's disturbing to me. I mean, on a very plain and simple level. But what's amazing to me is that, you know, the deal represents $2 billion, and it represents a lot of Facebook stock, but $400 million in cash. And it's just like it was not too long ago. What's the name of that company where you, Snapchat or something like that, sold for like $16 billion or something? Was it Snapchat that sold for that much? No, it was Instagram. Such an immense amount of money. A scary amount of money. I could be wrong about that $16 billion figure, but $2 billion for a business that hasn't even produced any of their products on a you know, mass scale. It's pretty amazing what that technology represents and what Facebook is trying to do as these technology companies diversify, the same way Google is diversified into becoming an internet service provider as opposed to just an avenue for, you know, ads and advertising.
Think about this day. Don't you remember, I think it was last year, they did some kind of, they released this thing saying that the CIA, it was in the Snowden stuff. Sorry, slow here. But don't you remember that the CIA had,
remember what?
Somewhere in the ballpark of 16,000 front companies that they were financing somehow or somewhat involved in?
Yeah, all right.
So, I mean, you know, it makes perfect sense.
Well, I mean, if you, Facebook would then represent 15,000 of those front companies. I mean, how could it not? That's a really big company, right? Amazingly enough, I'm not sure why it's really big. It's just the same way Twitter was worth billions of dollars to somebody. But how does Twitter make money? Nobody's been able to figure that out quite yet. Does it just become an ancillary, some sort of layer to your algorithm? It's, you own it and it's valuable as some sort of inside industry tool or mechanism to understanding about the habits and the, you know, context in which people are going to be interested, you know, for marketing purposes. What do people respond to and what are they most interested in? How can we sell them more objects? Exploit, you know, insecurities or, you know, fascinations that people have and understand that through algorithms that Twitter gets to develop in-house based upon the usage of their service. I don't know. All this technology, which is ever changing there. I mean, in Twitter might not even be the best example because there's all other types of programs like Tinder, right? that people become more fascinated with. And they say that, you know, Twitter's usage has already dropped off. The figures, like half of people that Twittered or were tweeting, you know, 3 years ago do not tweet anymore. People are cutting back on the tweeting. As people move on, just like Facebook. Facebook has reached a point at which it's plateaued. It really can't increase anymore. People still use it in a, you know, a basic way. How dependent they've become upon it. It's quite amazing to me. It really is. The future of the world was created whenever the smartphone happened. When was the first smartphone? What was the first Apple iPhone?
2006. It was an iPhone. I remember BlackBerry was the first big thing. Remember that was 2004 when it was like, oh, you can check your email on your phone.
A BlackBerry is a much different device, though, than a smartphone.
A BlackBerry is a smartphone, though.
Yeah, fair enough. But like an iPhone, I think is truly the that was the difference. There was before and after. And after, you know, was the iPhone. As far as the interface and what you can do with the technology, with the device, with the machine. Changed everything.
It's really made the world boring.
Well, and it's interesting because it's made people where nobody will answer their door anymore, let alone a phone call from somebody they don't know. Kind of isolated a little bit.
I'm sure that's by design.
What isn't by design, huh? Hi, everybody. 816-931-5534, 931-KKFI. The last few moments of the program. Excuse me. Pardon moi. We're coming up right before the top of the hour. We will have Worker Independent News, and then at 5 o'clock, Explorations with Michio Kaku. Well, hopefully they can find the Malaysian airplane so we can get back to talking about the Ukraine and how all the neocons and Tea Partiers out there can compare Obama to Neville Chamberlain and say that we are essentially, you know, folks, boys and girls, on the verge of World War 15.
Starring Steven Seagal.
And Arnold Schwarzenegger. He'd have to be there too, don't you think?
You didn't read about Steven Seagal this week?
What'd he do?
He says he's going to move to Russia. And he, like, had lunch with Putin and stuff.
Oh, just because Putin's a real man?
He's in, you know, Steven Seagal, he's one of those Clint Eastwood guys. You know, he really doesn't like Obama. I mean, do you remember 10 years ago? And like the way, you know, the people talk, I was listening to Rush Limbaugh the other day because I do that from time to time. And he was talking about Fahrenheit 9/11.
Rush Limbaugh was talking about Fahrenheit 9/11.
The Michael Moore movie.
Yeah, absolutely.
How they tried to smear Bush right before the election. Because what he was saying is that, you know, the trailers for that movie was Bush playing golf, and that Michael Moore was trying to make it look like Bush played a lot of golf. And it's like, how can he be playing golf? We got two wars and this and that. But apparently Obama, I mean, this is coming from Rush Limbaugh, but apparently Obama has played more golf than any other president in history. I think it was held, the record was held by like Woodrow Wilson or
no, it couldn't
James
have been Woody.
Garfield or someone yeah, like that.
Wilson was, that was time of war, you know, it was World War I. Couldn't have played a whole bunch of golf back then. But, you know, nevertheless, that's probably just a trend in, you know, golf as it becomes more.
But what I was saying is that they, you know, they make it out like, you know, like the left was really nasty, you know, during the Bush administration. But it's really, really torn apart out there.
Oh, polarized? Oh, I mean, it's very interesting. I mean, how polarized America is to the point at which, I mean, literally, if you don't agree with somebody politically, you're supposed to despise them, and there's no way you could have a conversation. Good morning, you're on the radio.
Hey, this is Brother Love again. You know what I'm most worried about in this world? Is the attack on the children. You know, and I see the kids getting attacked by gangs or drugs or sexuality. Drugs, gangs, sexuality. This is how they attack our children. And it's always been an attack on the children. All the way since ancient Egypt, there was an attack on the child. The firstborn up to age of two, kill him. You know, he was raised right amongst them, right in their midst. You know, they
brother
get,
love,
came
you got
down
ten,
now.
You got 10 seconds, brother love.
Okay,
10
and then
seconds.
The same with Rome, attack on the children. You hear me? And the same after slavery. I mean, 600 years after Rome, slavery.
Brother love, we'll talk to you next week. Have a great night. This has been the Paragon Radio Program. Till the future. Here on Community Radio in the 21st Century.
Monday at 9 a.m. on Jaws of Justice Radio, our guest is
Dean Becker, DrugTruth.net.
And he will be talking about his new book, To End the War on Drugs, a guide for politicians, the press, and the public. And you can call in with your questions and your comments. That's Jaws of Justice Radio, Monday morning at 9 a.m., right after Democracy Now!
You're listening to WIND, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham.
It's a beautiful day because working people are standing together. It's a beautiful day because working people are on the move together. See, we're taking a message across the country. Working people are taking action for a better life.
AFL-CIO President Rich Trumka speaking on the Philadelphia stop of the Give America a Raise bus tour. The bus rolls into Milwaukee today with support from Wisconsin Jobs Now, Wisconsin Citizen Action, the state AFL-CIO, and others. Trumka says there's a nationwide struggle underway to raise wages.
There's a new national debate going on right now. It's going on all across this country. It's about raising wages for hard-working people. It's about getting people a fair shake and justice and real benefits on the job. And while our leaders may be a little tone-deaf to it, the working people out there are talking about raising their wages every single day, right? Yes.
According to MIT's Living Wage Calculator, a living wage in Milwaukee is $19,717. If a single full-time worker made $10.10 an hour, that annual wage would be $21,008. The University of Wisconsin's Center on Wisconsin Strategy says that boosting the minimum wage to $10.10 an hour would give more than 500,000 Wisconsin workers raises and would generate 3,800 jobs. For the fifth straight year, the United Auto Workers Union has added new members. The UAW report filed with the U.S. Department of Labor reported a net gain of nearly 9,000 members in 2013. Job creation under UAW collective bargaining agreements at the Detroit Three automakers since 2008, plus successful organizing in places like New York University, Tulsa, Oklahoma, Arlington, Texas, and Louisville, Kentucky, and also at casinos in Ohio and Las Vegas, all contributed to the UAW's five straight years of membership growth. UAW contracts have brought production of the Ford Fusion and medium-duty trucks from Mexico back to Michigan, and transit commercial van production back to Kansas City from Europe. The UAW says there are thousands more workers who are still bargaining first contracts or who are represented by the union but have yet to sign union cards. When those are included, UAW membership is over 400,000.